Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode 311. Welcome back. In the news this week, just wanted to mention that the MSA, Masonic Services Association, has issued a Hurricane Harvey disaster appeal for Texas. If you'd like to learn a little bit more about that, I would suggest you head on over to their website, MSA, or head on over to freemasonsfordummies.blogspot.com, which is, of course, our good friend and brother Christopher Hodapp's site, where he goes through it in a little bit more detail. He's got some good insight there, so please check that out. This week's episode, I've got a couple things lined up for you. One is a little bit outside the norm, and what I mean by that, it's actually a reading of a book, and it's a couple selections that I quite enjoyed, and it made me think a little bit deeply, I guess you would say. And the book itself is not a Masonic book. It's not even written by a Masonic author. And the character in the book is not even a Mason. But I felt that the topic and what was being said and conveyed in the book was striking when it comes to self-reflection and some of the deeper thoughts we sometimes face within Freemasonry, within our lives, that kind of thing. We've also got a great segment by illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison, who you heard on our last episode, 310, which was a fantastic chat with him. We covered a lot of great ground there. Lastly, I will wrap it up with a really cool short piece that P.D. Newman put out in the Knight Templar magazine. And if you know P.D. Newman, he's written pretty extensively on some really great topics. Notably, he has made quite the niche for talking about medicinal plants and meditations. And in fact, his book is called Alchemically Stoned, and it's actually a really interesting book. So we'll have a link to that in our show notes as well for anybody interested. But for now, I'd like to give you a reading. Premise is this. This is a reading of H.G. Wells' The First Men in the Moon. Now, if you've ever read this story, you'll know it is an interesting one in that it employs some interesting science fiction, not unlike Earth to the Moon by Jules Verne, which is a tremendous text, which seems almost two-thirds of that book is concerned with the actual scientific build of a giant Columbiad or a cannon to fire a bullet toward the moon. And this book, The First Men in the Moon, takes a really interesting turn. To set the scene for you before the reading, you should know that a curious playwright befriends a mad scientist of sorts. They work together to come up with some sort of a compound which enables them to be weightless, or rather pull gravity in any direction they wish. Naturally, they use it to go to the moon, where they face a perilous journey. And in this first excerpt, you have Professor Caver and Mr. Bedford. Now, Mr. Bedford is our subject here in this text. He is the one who is thinking, and he is escaped some of the perils. And at this point, he's roaming the surface of the moon looking for the way back, which is by means of something called the sphere, which is like a capsule. And he sits there and he is exactly exhausted. But he's not found Caver anywhere. He is alone. And so these are some interesting thoughts. Why had we come to the moon? The thing presented itself to me as a perplexing problem. What is this spirit in man that urges him forever to depart from happiness and security, to toil, to place himself in danger, to risk even a reasonable certainty of death? It dawned upon me, up there in the moon, as a thing I ought always to have known, that man is not made simply to go about being safe and comfortable and well-fed and amused. Almost any man, if you put the thing to him, not in words, but in the shape of opportunities, will show that he nobs much. Against his interest, against his happiness, he is constantly being driven to do unreasonable things. Some force not himself impels him, and go he must. But why? Why? Sitting there in the midst of the useless moon gold, amidst the things of another world, I took count of all my life. Assuming I was to die a castaway upon the moon, I failed altogether to see what purpose I had served. I got no light on that point. It was made All my life, I had in truth never served the purposes of my private life. Whose purposes? What purposes was I serving? I ceased to speculate on why we had come to the moon, and took a wider sweep. Why had I come to Earth? Why had I a private life at all? I lost myself, at last, in bottomless speculations. My thoughts became vague and cloudy, no longer leading to definite directions. I had not felt heavy or weary. I cannot imagine one doing so upon the moon, but I suppose I was greatly fatigued. At any rate, I slept. That's the first part of this excerpt. And what I really enjoyed about this is he's thinking these deep thoughts that we sometimes think when we talk about the esoteric nature of Freemasonry. Where do we come from? And in his line, I ceased to speculate on why we had come to the moon and took a wider sweep. Why had I come to the earth? And so we'll go into the next excerpt, which is actually in the next chapter. And so in this excerpt that I'm about to read, Mr. Bedford has found the sphere and has taken off from the moon and has attempted to approach Earth. And he describes his way of going toward Earth, and he says, and that is what I did. Here is the excerpt. At last I felt my moonward start was sufficient. I shut out the sight of the moon from my eyes, and in a state of mind that was, I now recall, incredibly free from anxiety, or any distressful quality, I sat down to begin a vigil in that little speck of matter in infinite space that would last until I should strike the Earth. The heater had made the sphere tolerably warm, the air had been refreshed by the oxygen, and except for the faint congestion of the head that was always with me while I was away from Earth, I felt entire physical comfort. I had extinguished the light again, lest it should fail me. In the end, I was in darkness, save for the earthshine and the glitter of the stars below me. Everything was so absolutely silent and still that I might indeed have been the only being in the universe. And yet, strangely enough, I had no more feeling of the loneliness or fear than if I had been lying in a bed on Earth. This seems all the stranger to me, since during my last hours in the crater of the moon, the sense of my utter loneliness had been an agony. Incredible as it will seem, this interval of time that I spent in space has no sort of proportion to any other interval of time in my life. Sometimes it seemed as though I sat through immeasurable eternities like some god upon a lotus leaf, and again as though there was a momentary pause as I leapt from moon to earth. In truth, it was altogether some weeks of earthly time, but I had done with care and anxiety, hunger or fear for that space. I floated, thinking with a strange breadth and freedom of all that we had undergone, and all of my life and motives, and the secret issues of my being. I seemed to myself to have grown greater and greater, to have lost all sense of movement, to be floating amidst the stars, and always the sense of Earth's littleness, and the infinite littleness of my life upon it, was implicit in my thoughts. I can't profess to explain the things that happened in my mind. No doubt they could all be traced directly or indirectly to the curious physical conditions under which I was living. I set them down here just for what they were, what they are worth, and without any comment. The most prominent quality of it was a pervading doubt of my own identity. I became, if I may so express it, disassociate from Bedford. I looked down on Bedford as a trivial, incidental thing with which I had chanced to be connected. I saw Bedford in many relations, as an ass or as a poor beast, where I had hitherto been inclined to regard him with a quiet pride as a very spirited or rather forcible person. I saw him not only as an ass, but as the son of many generations of asses. I reviewed his school days and his early manhood and his first encounter with love, very much as one might review the proceedings of an ant in the sand. Something of that period of lucidity, I regret, still hangs about me, and I doubt if I shall ever recover the full-bodied self-satisfaction of my early days. But at that time, the thing was not in the least painful, because I had that extraordinary persuasion that, as a matter of fact, I was no more Bedford than I was anyone else, but only a mind, floating in the still serenity of space. Who should I be disturbed about this Bedford's shortcomings? I was not responsible for him or them. He then goes on to describe further that he is watching himself as Bedford, as this person that he just chances to be connected to. And he reasons later that this was all a hallucination due to his solitude, and the fact that he had lost all weight and senses of resistance, he endeavored to recover that sense by banging himself about the sphere, by pinching his hands and clasping them together. And so what does all this have to do with Freemasonry? This is kind of our off week where we do a little bit of reflection, some esoteric thinking, and I think that this excerpt brings some really interesting ideas to the forefront. The idea that one is not really oneself, that you're something else, connected to what you are or have chanced to experience through the senses inside this machine that you reside in. But in any case, a really cool book. If you guys ever get the chance to read it, it's not terribly long. I would say on the range of about 150 pages. And right around chapter 14, 15, it starts to become a real page turner. So it's pretty good for what it's worth. So thanks for bearing with me through kind of a cool reading, a little unorthodox, but as Masons, we are to study the liberal arts and sciences. And as it was, this was sort of a piece of art as well as some interesting verbiage with which to contemplate later on. In fact, if you're interested, I believe the copyright law on that book is long gone, so I'll go ahead and post a link to the PDF of the entire book. Merry Christmas. Next, I'd like to go into this week's segment with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison.
Most Freemasons know about two of our brothers who founded successful, even iconic, restaurant chains. We hear lots of stories about the deeds, Masonic and otherwise, of Colonel Harlan Sanders and Dave Thomas. I don't have to tell you those two men started, respectively, Kentucky Fried Chicken and Wendy's restaurants. Did you know there's a third brother who belongs in that elite group? Successful as he was, you may never have eaten at one of his restaurants unless you live in a specific geographic region. Legend has it that Bob Evans, founder of the restaurant chain bearing his name, would never open a restaurant where it would take more than a day to ship his farm-fresh sausage by truck. True or not, sausage was Brother Bob Evans' claim to fame. When he started a tiny diner in Gallopolis, Ohio in 1948, he was unable to get enough sausage, so he started making his own on his farm nearby. Over time, family and friends thought the sausage was so good, they encouraged him to make a business of selling it. Made with the best parts of the hog, however, restaurants and groceries judged his high-quality product to be too expensive. Unable to sell enough sausage elsewhere, Evans started his own restaurant chain, opening the first location on his farm in 1962. From there, Evans expanded his culinary empire to become a $1.7 billion retail food products company with 480 restaurants in 22 states. Later, outside of his alleged delivery area, he purchased the Owens restaurant chain based in Texas. Raised in Morning Dawn Lodge No. 7 in Gallopolis, Ohio, Brother Evans was also a member of the Scottish Rite, Northern Masonic Jurisdiction, where he received the 33rd degree. Dedicated to the Masonic tenets of brotherly love, relief, and truth, Evans retired from the restaurant chain in 1986 to devote his life to humanitarian causes. He channeled his energies to helping youth in the 4-H and Future Farmers of America organizations, as well as becoming a member of the Ohio Board of Regents, where he supported higher education. He was tireless in his efforts for the Heart Fund, the Ohio Society for the Prevention of Blindness, the Arthritis Foundation, and Easter Seals, among others. Brother Evans passed away in 2007 at the age of 89. Since his death, His farm near Rio Grande, Ohio, has been listed on the National Register of Historic Places. The house is the home of the Homestead Museum, which features items from his life and the company he founded. Although a big conglomerate has gobbled up his venerable restaurant chain, the food hasn't changed, and you can still feel the presence of Brother Bob inside. The next time you're traveling through the Midwest, you might run across one of its distinctive red and white buildings in what is known as the Steamboat Victorian style. If you do, you might stop in and remember our brother as you have the same kind of meal he would have served you down on the farm years ago. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, I hope you enjoyed that. Always great stuff. Make sure you check out the videos to those. We do publish them on our YouTube channel. WCYpodcast.com is our website. While you're there, do us a favor, support the show. Hover over the tab for support the show. You can click on make a direct donation where you can make a general donation, whether it's 50 cents or $5 or whatever you want to donate as a one-time donation. You can even set up recurrent donations and become a producer of the program. There are different options. You can $2, $5, $10, whatever you'd like to do. It all goes back into the production of this program. We greatly appreciate all the help. In addition, if you'd like to do a little shopping and support the show that way, of course, we do have the limited edition shop where you can pick up our lapel pins, our cufflinks, money clips, and I think I've got a tie bar left. And I also have the Mason's Lady car decal, so check those out. We've got some partnerships with Banker's Best through Levi Banker, where he's created some great products for us, so please check that out. And we also have the WCY and Thrive. And last but not least, Brothers Blend Coffee. So if you like coffee and you want to help out the Lodge, Montgomery Lodge in Milford, Massachusetts, where they use this as a fundraiser to support their charitable causes, activities, and maintenance of their lodge, please check out brothersblendcoffee.com. There's three different types of the coffee there. They have the Tyler's Cup, the Harmony Roast, and Adoniram's Brew. As you all know, these guys have been at it a while now, and it is a highly successful product, not just because it's a generalized Masonic charity, but people love coffee. I love coffee. There's a lot of you who probably love coffee too, so check them out. What do you have to lose? And now I'd like to do a reading, which comes from the September 2017 Knight Templar magazine, The Three Minerals for the Survival of a Masonic Meal by Sir Knight P.D. Newman. Again, P.D. Newman is the author of several articles online as well as in print, and his book, Alchemically Stoned, which is absolutely fascinating. We'll have a link to that in the show notes as well, so please do click on that and give that a read. But here we go. Three Minerals for the Survival of a Masonic Meal. The Masonic fraternity is not known for its meals, yet seldom is there a meeting where a meal is not prepared and served. Indeed, for many lodges, the jovial toasts of the festive board or table lodge are just as important as the lodge meetings themselves. However, while the wine is fine, the food oftentimes fails somewhere behind, and unfortunately for all of the mysteries that Freemasonry does address, delicious recipes simply do not seem to be among them. Rest assured, dear brethren, in all of their wisdom and consideration, our ritual progenitors have had foresight enough to know without a doubt that bad food would always be a problem within Masonry. Even if we were able to right all of the wrongs and injustices in the world, they knew that someone somewhere would still have to suffer through yesterday's tuna fish sandwiches and leftover cookies from the ladies' OES potluck. It is for this reason that the authors of our ritual have seen fit to include a fail-safe set of remedies that can combat even the most indigestible of meals. We speak here, of course, of the miraculous minerals referenced in the Entered Apprentice degree, chalk, charcoal, and clay, veritable minerals for the survival of a Masonic meal. Truly, a number of survival guides actually recommend precisely those three minerals to treat a whole array of digestive discomforts. For example, according to page 5 through 37 of the United States Department of Defense's 1985 United States Navy Air Crew Survival Equipment 1 and C Guide, one suffering from quote-unquote intestinal illness should eat clay, chalk, or charcoal. We Masons have known this for centuries. Chemically, chalk is calcium carbonate. Calcium carbonate is the active ingredient in digestive aids such as Tums. Early stonemasons used this mineral to combat the severe heartburn and indigestion that often followed a lodge meal. It comes in especially handy on chili dog night. Similarly, charcoal helps fight against severe nausea, as well as against the inevitable gaseous disruption. It won't stop it completely, mind you. Charcoal only has the power to placate the poots until the lodge meeting has passed. After that, it's between you and your wife, at which point only the great architect of the universe can help you. Finally, in their unquestionable wisdom, our ritual progenitors thought to include in our digestive arsenal the mineral clay, source of kaolinite. The active constituent of medicines such as kaopectate, kaolinite is a powerful anti-diarrheal. The operative stonemasons employed clay to immobilize even the most persistent of diarrheas. We speculative masons can use it for the same purposes. So the next time you're faced with Brother Lewis's lamentable leftovers or Brother Derek's dish of despair, recoil not in fear. Just calmly and surely reach for those three digestive minerals with which you were provided upon your initiation, and know that whatever plated poison may be passed your way, you'll be able to take it. You're a Mason. So, at the start of this article, I know you probably all thought, oh yeah, P.D. Newman, this guy is amazing and he's deep and all this. Well, turns out he's hilarious too. I couldn't believe I read this in this magazine. It seemed something more along the terms for the fodder of the Past Bastard articles. I hope it made you laugh and caught you off guard just a little bit. I thought about putting a disclaimer or something beforehand, but I didn't want to ruin any bits of what you were about to listen to or read. So, in closing, it should be noted that if you would like to contact Brother P.D. Newman, please email him at pdnewman@tupelomason.org. That's pdnewman at tupelomason.org. I'll also put a link to directly email him in the show notes as well. Funny guy, super intellectual actually, and great piece, really. That's it for this week, guys. I'd like to remind you all to check out the Midnight Freemasons, where we publish three articles every single week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. If you had the time, perhaps you read the piece I wrote last Friday about the Masonic Free Press. That may be a reading here upcoming in the show soon. But also, I'd like to announce here for the first time that if you have an Alexa or an Amazon Echo, and you ask for a flash briefing, if you have one, you know what that means, you can now enable the Midnight Freemasons. It will read to you, or she will read to you, the latest blog post from the Midnight Freemasons. So it's kind of cool as part of your morning ritual or your daily ritual or whenever you like to get your news. You can check it out that way. It's a lot of fun. I'll also remind you that if you like Masonic podcasts, I know you do because you're listening to this one, please check out the Masonic Roundtable, where we go live every Tuesday at 10, 9 Central. It's a live show. Again, it's five Masons from around the country gathering together to discuss Masonry in a friendly and social manner. We discuss all things amazing and some things that are not so amazing, but it's always a really fun time, and we learn a lot. We learn a lot from each other, and we learn a lot from you as you interact with us on the program. So please check that out, and that's it. So until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.